Lightning Dog, the official podcast, is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com. Lightning Dogs is conceived as an all-ages property, but these behind-the-scenes conversations are not all-ages. Listen in at your own discretion. Sometimes a great idea is truly like a bolt of lightning, and sometimes, if you're lucky enough, you can capture the exact moment that it strikes. That's what happened for us one fateful night while recording an episode of Nerdy Show. We accidentally launched a concept that derailed the entire show, and in no time, our lives. We couldn't stop talking about our favorite action figures and B-movies while twisting them into strange creatures, weird adventures, and dog puns. Lots of dog puns. This is the story of Lightning Dogs, a journey steeped in the glory of 80s and 90s animation and sci-fi where anthropomorphic dogs tear through the wasteland of a ruined Earth, battling mutants, miscreants, and the evil Glampire. Coming soon to small screens, comic books, and podcasts. Or at least that's the goal. But how do you go from a crazy idea into a fully formed world of conflicting characters? How does a harebrained discussion become an animated cartoon series? That's what we're finding out firsthand. We've recorded the entire development of Lightning Dog since day one, from the moment of conception to every world-building session and planning meeting, and the journey is still ongoing. Tune in as we create the world of Lightning Dogs live. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Doug.
I'm Tony.
Hi, I'm Nix.
I'm Brian.
And you are running with the pack now. This is Lightning Dogs! Lightning Dogs is a post-apocalyptic...
awesomeness.
Anthropomorphic dog story that we came up with by accident one day. And
we're still apologizing for it.
By making more of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense.
Mm-hmm. and it's been so popular that we did one by accident. We did one on purpose because fans funded it. Now we got to keep doing it because the only way that we develop this world and these characters is really when we sit in a room together recording these podcasts.
And if we don't do it here, it winds up working its way into other podcasts. And, well, they kind of deserve it.
It gets really disorganized.
It shouldn't take away from the other podcasts. It should just really be its own thing. So,
are we kenneling the Lightning Dogs ideas? Is that what we're doing? We're putting them in a pen?
Leashing them, really.
I gotta check the dictionary and see if that one applies.
In this episode, we've got to... this might be the one. This might be the one where we really, like, finally really put a bow on this proverbial setup thing. We've got so many characters, so much about the world, but it's not finite yet.
Right.
In the last episode, we mentioned that we were working on a 6-page comic project, and that script is done, and the comic is being developed currently.
Yep. Yes, it's true.
Except no substitutions. Lightning Dogs, the official script, has been produced.
Well, yes, the script was produced, but unfortunately, production of the anthology comic that it was a part of stalled out, and as such, so did our production of the Lightning Dogs minicomic. We'll link to where you can read the script, and also where you can see much of the early concept art that was created around this time, on this episode's page. Though the comic didn't get past words on a screen, the act of Doug, Tony, and I banding together over the project was pretty significant, and led to a lot of the initial concepts we roll out in this very episode. In order to do that script, we had to actually flesh out Lightning Dogs a little bit outside of the podcast. We started to share document. We were writing stuff back and forth.
We've kind of figured out the three. We've got three of the characters like set in stone at this point.
We worked with what we had that we knew was finalized.
Yeah.
So we didn't introduce any new characters. Well, kind of. we worked with what we had. So now we get to sort of finalize some more stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so hard, like, because we behind the scenes have done so much Lightning Dog stuff.
Right.
It's really hard to figure out what haven't we told them.
Well, I mean, I think they know the three main characters because we talk about them the most, which is Angela, the Basset Hound.
so stupid. I love it.
I know. It's great. Dingo, the Dingo, who's like their leader.
And Angela's
second in command.
Second in command, infiltrator.
Infiltrator, yeah, that she's got the sniff power. She's got the snout that can sniff out trouble. Pierre, who is...
He's a,
yeah, he's the Panthro analog.
Yeah, he's like the Panthro analog, except way cooler than Panthro.
He's a bit more like...
What?
Yes.
He's leaner than Panthro. He's kind of like a kung fu mechanic.
Yeah,
pretty
yeah.
much. He's the
hand-to-hand. Isn't that exactly what Panthro is, though?
Is he?
Was yes. he the mechanic?
Yeah.
Oh, we didn't make well. Cool we didn't. Shit. We didn't finalize Pierre as a mechanic, though.
Yeah, I'm not a Thundercats fan, so I don't. Yeah, I have no idea. I plead ignorance.
Although I will say when we were working on the script for the comic book, I was like, everyone should have like their own special skill. If Angela's is like she's like the infiltrator, she's kind of small. She can like rough and tumble. That's her thing, and she can smell everything. What's what's Pierre's thing? And I'm like, oh man, if he had like this really lean figure, like he was very skinny, and he's got like the poodle afro. What if he had like nunchucks? And then I was like, well, wait a minute, I don't want to step on Thundercats territory. And I was so not a fan. I've never watched Thundercats. Then I'm like looking up. I'm like, what did Panthro do? And it must have just been osmosis. And I'm like, god damn it, what the nunchucks.
I think the thing that sets him apart, if we do keep him as a mechanic, is that he does have a very lean figure.
He's yeah, more like, no, he looks very different. He does look different, so.
Which, going up with this episode, in case you haven't seen them yet, official Lightning Dog designs.
You're not sealed.
You're going to put them online? Link to them on this web zone?
You damn Skippy.
In the interim, I did a couple Lightning Dogs pictures myself. Oh, yeah?
I have a totally unrelated question, but it's very important.
Okay. Go for it.
Can we start a Lightning Dog's web ring?
Well, on GeoCities?
Is that even possible anymore? Does that happen?
We do have a Lightning Dog's guest book, though. You could go and log in and...
Maybe a little scribble. Thank us for inviting you to the wedding.
Paw print and the... What's the thing you put in your dogs nowadays? The tracker? The little...
Computers. You put Prism in there. Oh, God. They get everybody.
So wait, why do we want like an Angel Fire website with a MIDI of Dust in the Wind playing in the background for Lightning Dogs? Why do we want that?
Rotating skulls and candles.
I think you just answered your own question, Cap. All we but are anyway, Pierre, dogs in the wind.
Pierre, so as far as we go right now, I'm just recapping.
Yeah.
Pierre doesn't really have a weapon. He's more of a... He uses his fists.
He's the way I've broken it down, at least, and you guys can correct me if this isn't going to work.
That's why Dingo, we're here.
Dingo's going to be a knife specialist, bladed weapons. Kind of tying in with the Dingo, the Australian. He's going to have a giant machete, a little bit of Crocodile Dundee.
Okay, okay.
Angela's a grappler.
Right.
Tying in with, she's kind of got this low center of gravity, very stout, yeah, very muscular. Yeah. And Pierre is Lightning Paws. He's the hand.
Yeah, because I would say, like, if Angela's power was to smell things, Pierre's power was to move lightning fast. Like, he's like a really quick guy. So that's why Kung Fu really works well with him.
Yep. Right.
Yeah. With Dingo, though, I liked an early drawing that Cap did where he had, like, a holster on the side. Are we going to give them, like, weapons? Like, I mean, like...
What you might have not noticed about that gun that he's firing is that there's crystals jammed into it.
Oh,
so
okay.
So at some point, they figure out a way to...
To use the crystals.
Yeah, to weaponize crystals so we can have classic 80s, like, laser-on-laser battles.
Yeah, yeah. That's because that's everything I want in a cartoon. So it's, like, just more purple lasers. It's, like, you can't have enough.
Crystals, you say? Oh, we totally forgot to mention the crystals. Here's what happened. Doug wrote the initial outline for the comic script, which went a little something like this.
Dingo, Pierre, and Angela emerge from a cave with a sample of rare crystals that will be used to restore power to the Farfetch. Just as they're about to make their way back to the car, Angela smells that the Diamond Dogs are near and waiting to ambush them.
We didn't talk much about it, but as we fleshed out the script, we built on this idea that crystals would be a commodity and energy source in the wasteland. And at some point between this episode and the last, we just took that to be the status quo. But we didn't end up mentioning it on a podcast. And it's kind of important. Further down the line, we add a lot more to this concept. And now, back to Lightning Dogs.
I felt that we needed to bring back some of the bladed weapons, at least a little bit, because when we were initially pitching Lightning Dogs, was the whole idea that instead of Thundercats, which had a lot of the sword and sorcery meeting a future tech, we were going to do future tech meeting sword and sorcery.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it would make sense that, you land in a post-apocalyptic war zone, you can get bladed weapons fairly easily. So it all makes sense. At least I feel like that.
Yeah.
So. But other than those three.
Those are the only ones that are set in stone.
Yeah. Do we even have other dogs to go with?
Like a couple archetypes that we'd like to have.
We know that there's going to be a Wamariner.
I'm still not even know what that means.
It's like shiny gray short furred kind of
dog breed. Okay, I thought I keep confusing with the Wile E. Cat Wamariner. I'm like, is this more characters from Thundercats? We gotta leave that shit behind.
Wait. Okay, so for the Wile E. Kit and Cat, we need a Corgi and a Valhund, which is a kind of Corgi.
okay, here's an idea I had. I don't know if I've shared this with anybody yet. The idea is, like, we've toyed around with this, like, the idea of the Terror Terriers as or these corgi situation as like this whole Wile E. Coyote Calamity corgis thing. Yeah, we don't know what to do with them because kid characters are kind of annoying, and we decided to come up with this kind of angsty teen character instead. Seemed more interesting.
Yeah,
we haven't defined that character yet. An idea I had to reveal the Wile E. Kit Wile E. Cat thing eventually would be to have a diamond dog, because the diamond dogs are actually dogs from the, you know, canine homeworld,
right?
Encased in a chrysalis of crystal and all that, right? So it's a four-armed diamond dog that's actually two dogs. If it ever broke, it can break in half, and it's actually two small dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it's like a Goro kind of.
Goro meets Master Blaster?
Yeah, but with two kids inside of it.
I am entirely down with that.
How do we feel about that?
That's pretty good.
I think that would be a phenomenal action figure.
And there we go.
It would be cool if, like, they're fighting the one that looks taller, like just slightly taller than the other diamond dogs, and they're like, you take the big guy, and then, like, they start fighting the big guy, and it's like, oh man, he's tough, but I think I finally got him beat. And just when you think it's like, oh man, he's finally got him, two more arms just pop out of the side. You're like, what? And then they start going nuts. Way better than General Grievous.
I just remembered something that we should probably bring up as soon as we can on here. First of all, there's been a tremendous fan response to Lightning Dogs.
And we love you guys. Oh my God.
We are thrilled. In this fan response, there's been so many suggestions. It started off as a trickle, and then it ended in a tidal wave, and there's been, like, huge posts and everything. And here's what's happened. Because when Lightning Dog started, like, developing, and we started getting kind of serious about it and started doing this comic book, we realized that we can't actually take any kind of solicitations from the outside. But I don't want to, like, I don't want to say, hey, fans, don't send us suggestions or anything.
Right.
But the fact is, I haven't actually, like, I started reading them, and then I actively said, I cannot read this. Otherwise, it's going to, like, throw off what we're doing here. And because, you know, we like Lightning Dog so much, we might actually do something with it.
Right,
we don't
want
there to be any, like, being, like, kind of rights confusions or anything like that. So I don't know what to tell you guys.
Developmentally.
Well, no. I think what we could do is, like, we'll have to go do our thing with Lightning Dogs, get the world built, get the characters built, and then if we decide to do something with it and something comes of it, that'd be fantastic.
Right.
But then afterwards, do like what they do with Warhammer 40K, just sort of crack the universe open. Like, once it's established, then let the fans, like, have it be very interactive with the fan community. Like, not everything they say is suddenly canon, but the idea that you too can expand the world of Lightning Dogs if you really wanted to, if you really worked on it.
Well,
but not now, because just throw the fans a bones. What you said, but not
throw a bone.
Not this early in the process, because we still don't know a lot of things.
Or something we mentioned early on is, like, wouldn't it be great to do a role playing show with Lightning Dogs?
Right, right.
But now I've got to the point where that makes me really nervous. Like, we don't even know the characters well enough. So all of a sudden we'd be pairing off and actually letting members of our...
Yeah, and we're not going to have everybody... It's like, in order to find out who's going to play Pierre, we'll have to have a fist fight or an arm wrestle competition in here.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden that character will be defined by a single person rather than a committee like we've been doing things. So it'll be really weird. I'm like,
that's down the road. We got to get the world straight first. We can't have a role-playing game before the world is finished being built.
Exactly. And I guess what I was getting at, I suppose, was... maybe we'd come up with something where it would be openly expandable. Like, if we create character sheets for Lightning Dogs, then all of a sudden people can do what they want.
Yeah,
with
they can
dogs.
Build their own and go on their own adventures.
Exactly.
Yeah. And produce a podcast and tell us about it.
Why not? If you're that big of a fan, why stop?
No, I'm just saying, you know.
Let's talk about the characters that were kind of on the table, the archetypes.
Yeah, well, because again, just to recap, we got Dingo, we got Pierre, we got Angela. They're pretty close to how I think they're going to be.
And they're all kind of military brawler archetypes
so far. Yeah, like they're definitely, they're the experts, yeah.
And the other characters that are the auxiliary characters, Beasthound.
We have
Beasthound pretty much figured out.
That's true, yeah.
He's Bronx from Gargoyles.
Hey, he's got a very deep story. We just haven't explored it all yet.
He might.
Oh man, it's gonna tug at your heartstrings.
And the Wolfman Jack AI.
That I think we'll need a little bit more on that. But we got to figure out. There's got to be a scientist,
right?
You know,
the master expert.
The scientist and master expert could be two separate people. The scientist master expert could be two separate people, and one of them could be the teenager. Or maybe
the teenager, I think we nailed down, was going to be the tech expert, the hacker.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, the story we worked
out. Rollerblades.
Well, I love
yes.
I like Hex's comparison from earlier, that it was like the John Connor surrogate, the wayward sort of teen who's really good with the tech stuff and is somehow good with the human tech and is able to like figure that stuff out. Whereas no,
yeah, Aaron, a better like, actor than what's his name?
Kind of like how he's a savant. Like he just naturally is able to somehow connect with the human tech.
Like he just gets it. So it's like these kids that just get technology and these old people that go, how did you make it do that?
Yeah, I mean, he hacked some kind of a military system. He got sent into like some sort of juvenile detention kennel, and he's paying his time by going on this mission. Mm-hmm. And I say he, but actually we haven't even determined what gender this character is.
We need more girls in it.
We have one so far.
Two, I thought.
No, we got Angela and that's pretty much it.
I created a female character, which we'll get into, but we haven't actually formally discussed whether or not she exists.
Okay.
The tech expert, the sort of a scientist or anthropologist or archaeologist,
the master expert, maybe,
basically,
or whatever.
Basically master expert. If we have a too big a team, then it's sort of a problem. But I'd say five or six is where we should stop initially. And then of course, there's the obligatory expansions that happen in later seasons.
You could lose one, replace one, whatever.
Have the B team that exists in base A.
Air quotes, you know, follow up seasons, whatever that means.
Right. Well, it'd be a good chance to figure out what characters work well with each other and
what relationships to explore.
Yeah.
So during this process where we were coming up with characters, we were building out this Bible, right? We've got all this like text. We listened to the shows again. We wrote down all the notes. We got it all straightened out. And in doing that, I came up with two other characters and I wrote them down at risk of forgetting about them. The first one is a female character that we just mentioned.
The Whamriner?
The Whamriner, yeah. I thought a Whamriner would be a very interesting look for a Lightning Dog character.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted another female character.
Right.
So I started drawing this female Whamriner, then sort of worked in a backstory retroactively. The idea would be that, and this is all tentative because we have been doing this by committee, so I'm not going to throw this down.
Which is what you got. Yeah.
She's a engineer / grease monkey. She basically works in tandem with Pierre on a lot of things. Like he's kind of the hot rod junkie when it comes to building all these old cars up and everything, but she's the one who sort of
actually knows how they work or whatever.
Yeah. Her power is called Blind Shot, which is that she has an augmented awareness of spatial relations surrounding her proximity. So she sort of has a
super hearing.
Not super hearing. It's like she says as a spatial, like it's like, imagine like a psychic echolocation. It's not sonic based, but it's like, it's awareness based.
She can pick up if people are nearby.
Yeah, and what I define
like,
it by
more
is,
like the sixth sense that dogs have, you'd say? It was like the angle?
I guess so. By its name, basically she can shoot enemies behind her back without looking.
Right.
Whether or not her aim's good, that's,
or like,
you know,
over-cover.
That's subjective. But yeah, like she's unbeatable at fetch ball. Like she's...
right. I remember that. Yeah.
And then another note I had was that she was charged with keeping the teen in line. She doesn't know systems, though. She knows hardware, so she's able to sort of put this kid to work. So that's that character. And in many ways, she does seem like rather auxiliary by comparison to the other, like,
roles. Right. Well, that's why we gotta get out to start expanding it.
Yeah.
And you have another one?
I do have another one. This other one is, this is the master's expert. I was on Wikipedia looking for dog breeds, and I came across one called Cane Corso. It's an Italian dog that looks really cool. And I'd never heard of it before and thought, that's a good name for somebody.
That does sound cool. I can't picture I don't know what the dog looks like, though. Like,
I am Cane Corso.
Yeah, I can bring up a picture here.
Well, because, I mean,
it's a pretty gnarly dog. It kind of looks a little pit bullish.
Well, like, we got to be careful, though, because, I mean, Dingo is the breed of the dog, and his name is Dingo. And everyone else has got a name.
Honestly, Cane Corso is such an awesome name.
Cane Corso is a great name, but like, is it going to get confusing or weird if we start calling character names the breed names? Like, too much?
Depends on how we spell it. We'll add a Y.
I did change the spelling.
Okay.
It's
okay.
Cane Corso with a C. I changed it to a K.
Oh, right,
that's
okay.
Pretty good. I think we're ready to write a video game in 1993.
Cane Corso is an Italian breed of dog for years valued highly in Italy as a companion, guardian, and hunter. So that's interesting. Just that guardian and hunter bit.
So I was thinking, okay, so I've got this name. It's an Italian-y name. So what if we have he's the Italian equivalent of, you know, the dog race, just like Pierre's, you know, French.
Right. To a point.
Or Creole or something.
Right.
He's this master's expert. So I started thinking about, well, what kind of dialogue can I create with these factors?
Mm-hmm.
As a master's expert, I basically said, okay, well, he's Catholic, or he was raised Catholic, the de facto Catholic being like some really heavy-handed religion in the dog world.
Of the
like,
master. Of the masters. Be the masters. Yeah. I got you. Okay. I'll be like, what, did a human leave rosary beads behind on the planet? But no. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
But in order to say it more concisely, let me just read what I wrote here. Mm. He is an easily irritated Italian type. Think a mashup of Jean Reno and Boris from GoldenEye.
Of course, neither of those characters are Italian or, you know, whatever.
The archetype.
Yeah. He's thick-bodied, a bit uppity. He wears glasses. He can be charming, but it's in a sleazy European way. This guy puts his research before everything and easily puts others' insane judgment at risk for the furtherment of knowledge. He's potentially a turncoat, but he's not all doom and gloom. Like Boris, he's funny. His family were devout worshippers of the masters. Though he has no delusions that they were mortals, he holds on to complicated stigmas and guilt from his upbringing. He wants to laugh in the face of his world's gods, but deep inside, he still longs for their acknowledgement of him and their love. However, despite Kane's many flaws, he's not a bad guy. There's just a substantial cultural difference between him and the military types. He respects those who don't take things too seriously, unless there's something that Kane takes seriously. He isn't a trained sniper or anything, but he's comfortable with a rifle. Possible ability, geomancy, because that's good for digging, and he's an archaeologist.
So, like, he can sense things underground?
Or he can actually move the ground. To a small extent.
Okay.
He's an earthbender.
Why is he with these guys?
Why is he with them?
Because he's the master's expert. Like, you're going to the master homeworld.
Right.
You got to have a guy that speaks the language.
So the military offer him protection, and he's on his personal quest.
What's his name from Stargate?
Daniel Jackson.
Yeah, basically.
Except not as nerdy.
Except like a real dirt bag.
Yeah.
And he moves dirt.
So obviously that's actually pretty dark. It's pretty heavy handed. That would be sort of the subtext to this kids show that we're developing. Mm-hmm. Like that wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't really go down those roads exactly. Just be kind of in the background of the character.
I like Dr. Kane Corso has a nice ring to it.
Yeah. When we were at Heroes Con, Cap kind of pitched me these characters, and Kane is one that I immediately latched onto. I really like what we can do with this character.
Mm-hmm. And would it be doctor or would it be professor?
No, is professor or doctor some? Like, what's...
I'm a professor of archaeology.
Well, professor would suggest that he wasn't a practicing... Well, then again, I guess doctor isn't necessarily...
Doctor is... I mean, you earn a doctorate. You don't earn a professorship exactly.
It's true.
I don't know. I think doctor sounds more intense.
But, like, I'm just saying, like, literally the word. How does the word sound? Dr. Kane Corso. Professor Kane Corso.
Like, Dr. Kane Corso definitely makes it sound a little more menacing, in my opinion. That sounds like a... Closer to, like, an evil 80s villain.
I said, or Dr. Lizardo from
Dr. Emilio Lizardo, an Italian doctor. There we go. That's what was going on in the back of my mind.
either way, the character seems like it's got places to go. I just worry. Yeah. Again, it's like my concern is simply not getting too bummer. If he's just like,
right.
Oh, you know, no, the no, masters, no. That, you know, like
that's not
why he said the humor. He's got the sense of humor or whatever.
Yeah, he's a shit. Like, he's kind of a lovable shit. Like, he's obsessed with his work, but the thing is, like, and you can't really dismiss him because you as a viewer are interested in his work. He's kind of fascinating.
Would you say he's the most charismatic of the group?
Depends on who he's being charismatic to, but yeah, probably. I mean,
like, from the audience standpoint,
he has a kind of mystique, but I mean, I don't think anybody would trust him. That's definitely something he'll struggle with. There's going to be multiple instances where Glampire might make some deals.
Would he and Dingo be the ones butting heads the most?
Oh, totally. Okay. Because, I mean, because basically Dingo's there for the mission, then protecting his world from Glampire, like, ever getting a hold of the Farfetch. Kane is on his own personal quest.
Right, like, right. Okay.
It's the pack versus a lone wolf.
Kind of, I'm seeing like, I can't remember the character name from The Dig. That guy, the was it the German guy in The Dig?
I'm not familiar with this, no.
The LucasArts game, The Dig.
Oh, that game. I've never played it.
Yeah, there's a character, when they get to the alien planet, it's a character who's starts discovering the alien powers or whatever that are, like, buried in all this, you know, ancient city and stuff, and he kind of doesn't report in as much, and you, the main character, you're just like, hey, man, you haven't been off on your own a long time. He's like, I'm busy trying to figure out how this power and stuff works, and he just kind of gets too obsessed, and he kind of goes nuts or whatever, but... There was, like, a lot of interesting stuff that happened there where it's, like, in the game, he became more of a bad guy, whereas it seems like in the show, it's, like, that's obviously a point of contention for them, you know?
Yeah.
But he's, like, you know, he is for the mission, but he is, like, got a strict moral thing where, like, ultimately, if it's between the mission and his personal feelings...
Like, you know, he's out for knowledge, but also, at the same time, Glampire getting a hold of Farfetch is not in his interest.
Right.
And, like, if he went into a deal with Glampire, he would be planning how to betray Glampire. Right. But he also wouldn't be able to let the Lightning Dogs know about his deal with Glampire because they'd go crazy on him.
So he does consider himself to be smarter than, like, all of them.
Oh, yeah. He is an egoist.
Yeah. Okay.
And then on the topic of the Wurmreiner and how we kind of said that she seems a little more ancillary, I don't necessarily see that as a problem. Because what the archetype that I picture her as is Kaylee from Firefly. She is necessary to keep every gear turning.
That's one way, I was going to say, because if Pierre like is into the cars, but he's not really like the team mechanic or whatever.
He's the wheel man.
Yeah, if he's like the wheel man or whatever. I don't know. Like, we'll have to figure out the balance, but I think the Narissa Pierre might be like the central love interest is how it feels. Because if they're both like interacting more than any other two Lightning Dogs interacting more and more, like there might be a unrequited funny banter sort of potential there. I think
it could happen. I think it might be one of those sort of TV show love interests where they're the ones that make sense, so they start being played up that way.
It's like it's like they make sense, but it's constantly a will they won't they, and not even because the characters want it to happen, because you're like, they would be good together. Like, they would, you know, like, the audience is like, I want to see that happen. But
then ultimately, like, at some point, the tables turn and she's, like, with Dingo.
Yeah, and then, but it's just like, wait, are you jealous? It's like, no, I got nothing to be jealous about. I'm just, you know, it's like, I just think there's a lot of cool potential there. If she's the gearhead making all this stuff work, and he's the one who kind of is into the car thing or whatever, there's like...
So the grease monkey and the gearhead.
Yeah, there's like a natural starting point for the two of them or whatever, which I think could be interesting because it would make it to add, first of all, to add another aspect to Pierre other than just being the kung fu badass, but also so that not every single person is either your military or your science. And, you know, you got to bridge the gap a little bit, you know, between that. That could be cool.
I mean, I like those two characters. I think we need to address the elephant in the room, which is our tech head.
Yeah, the kid or whatever, kid. The teenager. Yeah, okay.
Do we even have a breed?
We don't have a gender. We have some really cool character details. If we can figure out like those two elements,
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is rollerblades like underlined?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have underlined it three times.
Brian, tell you what, I'm gonna put it in red.
Thank you.
Bold, italicized, underlined. 3 exclamation points.
Now, Hex, this hacker character was nearest and dearest, I think, to you. Do you have any ideas?
Not really. I just thought with all this technology, if we're going to have two hardware experts, it'd be great to have a software expert and to kind of like make the teenager kind of feel useful in this group dynamic of a bunch of trained military experts. If we had someone who just had this natural affinity, I just thought putting it kind of into her hands would make them want to incorporate her more and want them feel that she's also necessary for the group instead of just like, oh, we have to protect her.
Do you have any strong feelings for any particular breed or anything, like something that would fit that?
Not really.
Beagle?
I've been racking my
beagle?
Brain.
I heard beagle.
Beagles are cool. I don't know. Like, beagles don't seem angsty.
But they can. You get that floppy ear draped over one eye.
Brian, I see it. I googled beagle pictures. I'm looking at these beagles here, and they're looking pretty adorable. But I'm also thinking, I bet I can make that beagle look sarcastic,
and I can give it the DreamWorks smile.
I like beagles. Like, I personally like beagles. I just I'll have to see. I've yet to see a sarcastic beagle. Is what I'm saying. It's like,
oh, give me time. Just picture the eyes closed slightly.
Backwards baseball cap?
Yes.
Oh, my beagle? God, yes.
Why are you even asking? I'm kind of angry at you.
Fingerless gloves.
Okay, so wait. The color palette for everyone else has to be, you know, fairly normal or whatever. This one, it's all 90s super neon ugly shit.
Comic Zone.
Yes. Fingerless gloves. Oh, my God.
I said that.
You said multiple colors, and you said multiple colored hat. I just thought of the Back to the Future 2 Marty Jr. like cafe 80s hat. Just
throw some circuit board patterns on there, and I think we got
circuit board patterns.
All right,
Oakleys.
Now is we've used both the masculine and the feminine pronoun with this character. Is there a compelling reason to make it either male or female outside of, well, we've got to fill the lady quota?
It would be really funny if they just never ever tackle
just never
it.
Discuss it. If it's just a neutral name,
Charlie.
Well, we discussed at one point having them call the kid.
Yeah,
and not really going anywhere with. I mean, you know, he's like, I have a name. Yeah, whatever, kid. For some reason, this character is tough.
Having to be the most angsty character, you know, gives it a hard image of like what I've yet to see an angsty dog.
More importantly, a kid character is really easy to fuck up, and especially since we've had these other characters that have a real. I mean, there's a reason to have everybody else be what they are. This character, if we make it a girl, it could just be filling a quota. If we make it a guy, are we to, why?
If we make it a girl, I don't want it to be Ed from Cowboy Bebop.
And that's a danger we run into.
Yeah. With this character being a kid, there's that fine line between being a really shitty kid character, and I don't mean shitty attitude, just like shitty as in the quality, right, or something that's really cool, which is why we've probably been very careful and very like, we none of us have been really digging into it too much because it's so easy to mess up.
Yeah.
It's so easy to take it one step too far and then it just becomes silly or then it just becomes a throwaway thing.
It was definitely something that when I was creating these other characters, I was like, oh, maybe I should, no, I'm not going to do it. Not going to touch it. It's not going to be me who does it.
Well, because it's difficult. It's, because yeah, again, to try and, you know, straddle that line between cool and cheesy, it's interesting.
It's tough.
Yeah. We already got a bulldog. We got General Wetwork. That was another one. That was another one that we still needs a little bit of work.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's auxiliary characters we came with, like the Fido Farnsworth and the General, and these characters that we maybe see like once in the first season and then like come back a little bit later once they reactivate the Farfetch.
Yeah. Well, we know some breeds that wouldn't work would be like, obviously, like something like Beagle works pretty good so far. We know we wouldn't want something like a Chihuahua or a Great Dane.
Well, here's a weird suggestion. How about a dog that's just going to be difficult to feminize? A Schnauzer.
Mm. Or just like, what about just a mutt? Like, if maybe that's why it's kind of angsty, is because it doesn't really, it's just a mutt. It's just like, you don't even really know what it is.
It's a Heinz 57, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Because if it's just like a mix of things, like, we can just pick a medium-sized dog and mix it with something. It can be a little bit more versatile if we just say he's a mutt. Like, he doesn't belong anywhere. He's like an outcast. Not that there's,
I really
like
that idea.
Yeah, and not to insinuate that there's racism on the dog planet, but just that
it makes sense. And congratulations, Doug, you discovered the obvious thing that our brains were just tiptoeing around the whole time. This was the obvious choice.
You know, you're welcome. I was just trying to think of like, why is he conflicted? Maybe he's a mix between, not to say that people who, you know, people, you know, mix of,
what you trying to say about mixed races?
I'm
Doug,
not saying anything. I like the Cheerios commercial. It's great. I thought it was, I thought it was endearing.
Crunch, crunch, crunch.
But if the dog was a mutt, we don't have to.
You can't use that word.
We can't say mutt.
No, if we're implying that the dog is interracial.
No. That's what I'm saying. We're not implying that it's interracial. We're not even implying that there's racism on the dog planet. Just that if the dog is a mutt, no one even has to address that. They're like, you're just a mutt, because that would be, you know, like, you know, mudblood, like, you know, I don't, you know, that'd be too negative or whatever. But if it's just a mutt and they never, you know, even people in the audience go, what kind of dog is that? Nah, it's probably just a mutt. Like, the audience doing that would be enough to make the character make sense. None of the other characters have to address it, I don't think. You know, what's better than a lovable mutt? I saw some pictures on the Tumblrs, a corgi mixed with a Doberman, and it had like a small corgi face, but massive ears, and it was adorable. Of course, we're going for mutt. It's not necessarily the most adorable thing, but
I think we can work with this. I think that's a good tactic. So
you could test it too. You know, you could figure out what looks best without being restricted.
You can just draw random dog parts and then figure out what
just mash them together.
Because Dingo has to look like a dingo. The scientist, the new guy,
King Corso
has to look like King Corso. Narissa looks like Narissa. Pierre looks like Pierre. Like it all kind of makes sense. But for this character, if it's just a mutt, it can be male or female, still be a mutt, still look however we want it to look. It doesn't have to be like, oh, if we pick a dog breed that looks masculine, but it's a girl, is that saying something? Well, no, what if it's just a fucking mutt? And then we can make it whatever we want.
Cool. I think there's a lot of subtlety to that. And so if we all feel good about that, we can just make put a stamp canon on this and we can just say, this is...
She's a mutt!
Yeah, and do we want to call the character Kid?
We can call her Kid for now, and then we can reveal her name like Uhura later. Just Kid, and then...
K-Y-D-D.
KYDD.
Oh man, I don't know about that
one. Now, if you say it's KYDD and it's just like, what if she invents like a little monitor that sits above her eyes and now she's Kid Vid? And I'm like, oh Christ, we're going more 90s garbage. Like,
you know what's bad? I missed that. I didn't realize that's how I was spelling that.
Yeah, with the backwards baseball cap with the visor on. No, we ain't doing that.
No, you know what? Why not? We've already done the backwards baseball cap. We've already done the rollerblades. We're doing fingerless gloves.
It's like,
let's high cops.
Rollerblades to come out of the high tops?
Yes.
All right.
I want that.
Slap bracelets. The slap bracelets.
Yes.
It's a slap collar. It's a slap collar. You slap it around your neck.
That's the weapon. She takes it off and she starts wheeling it like a fucking whip.
Brian, did you suggest that was some kind of a tech thing? Is that what you said?
Yeah. I don't know how.
I don't know, but I like the idea of slap tech.
So like, what? Oh, dude, what if we just accidentally invented the newest, coolest thing where it's a slap bracelet, except it's also a USB drive? It's like a jump drive. It's a jump drive. You slap it on your wrist. Hey, whatever. But then when you straighten it out, you can just stick it in your computer and it's USB jump drive.
I need this in my life.
Of course, she could always just take the slap bracelets to tie something together when it's really looks like an emergency. It's like, we can't keep track of all these cables. Hold on, I got this. And then...
I'm sorry. We can't keep track of all these cables. The worst problem that Lightning Dogs has to face.
Well, no. I mean, if like they're under attack from like Glampire and the thing's falling apart, but they need to get Wolfman online to open up the gate so they can roll the pack out.
She's got a fanny pack full of like USB cords and interface things, but definitely a fanny pack.
We have instilled the 90s into a single character.
She carry a wallet with a chain on it, like wallet chain.
Oh my god.
Okay, so that means we have a cast of six.
And I think that's a good number.
That's pretty strong, yeah. I think if any more pushes it a little too much.
Yeah. We have our plot, you know, Lightning Dogs, they come to this Earth looking for answers. They find danger and have to destroy their way home in order to protect their home.
In doing so, they are
in the explosion. They're given the powers of
powers.
Yeah.
What are the kids' powers?
Technomancy.
Speaks to machines.
But you got to sort of explain me more on that as to how exactly, like literally, like just the kid goes over, puts her paw on something and suddenly knows how it works, or like.
Instead of inputting commands, she can ask it what to do. So it's literally talking to machines.
But if she's already good with machines, how's that any different, you know? Like, if her superpower is just a subtle exaggeration of her already superior computer knowledge.
It enables her to have a more human connection, and of course I use that term loosely, a human connection with machines.
Almost like she's imbuing them with sentience.
More of an awareness, sort of an immediacy. It'll end up being more of a plot device than anything. It'll be like, instead of having to like putz around figuring out what's going on, she'll just know.
That's one thing I was just thinking, like, because so far every other person's power is like an extension of what a dog can do.
I see very few dogs on computers.
Yeah, I mean, if you Google it, you can find a bunch. But just Google dog on computer, and you'll find a bunch. Dingo barks really loud, Cane Corso can like sort of be an earthbender, which is kind of cool because they're digging, to me that makes sense. Norisa's kind of got like that sixth sense sort of thing where she, you know, like she can sense when someone's near. Angela can smell really well. Pierre's really fast. I don't want to just make the kid hear things really well, but there might be
and
something.
Wagging,
you know,
the tail really fast and causing typhoons.
Tail tornado, you know, whatever. Like, she doesn't have to have something that fits in with the rest of the group, but...
No, I think
we build her up as being so... She's already, like, a genius with master technology.
Let's give her the tail tornado.
No.
That won't be helpful, though.
That's the fun of it.
A useless power.
That is totally useful.
but not for, I don't know, because, like, you don't want to give her a power that would be, like, for a military person, for, like, Dingo could use a tail tornado out to fight something. Whereas if the kid is not really always, sometimes have a fight, but the kid's not always in direct danger of a fight. But when she is she going to be able to do something? Or maybe she doesn't know she has a power because it's more subtle or something? Until she's threatened.
What if it gets defensive? Like all of a sudden, like, you know, like she's working on the computer or something. I need more time. Then she doesn't have more time.
She kind of hulks out or something.
Like all of a sudden there's crystals and lasers and like, but then she's not hit because what happens? Well, a big wall of wires just exploded from the substructure. I don't know, like Akira or something.
That's bizarre.
I think there's something to having it be like she's not aware of what she has. And they think that maybe she was just lucky that she wasn't affected or whatever. But like her thread of the story can be, because her thread of the story is her trying to find her place anyway.
Yeah.
So finding her power might also be, you know, like the audience might have a hint of that something's going on. But if she's not totally aware, her trying to find her place and her power all at the same time might be.
Which could connect to the thing we suggested before, which is that at some point she like builds a robot or discovers an ancient AI like that.
Yeah. I feel there's something there. Something feels very valid there.
I'm going to keep the title of Tail Tornado to work in somewhere.
No.
No, it's happening, Hex. You can't stop this.
Well, it could be a vehicle feature.
Or it could even be one of the Diamond Dogs.
Which is another thing we got to address, which is the vehicles. Mm-hmm. I guess mostly we just need to draw them. But, you know, they've all got these unique vehicles. The pack was what we discussed having, like, a big sort of tank thing that the other things went into, like a carrier. I feel like that could use a little bit more definition. It seems...
The way I pictured it, the way I remember talking about it, was that there's, like, a main tank, which is, like, a sort of roving unit that the three non-combatant dogs can ride in. Like, K- kid, Dr. King Corso, and Narissa can ride around in the tank, whereas the other lightning dogs, they can either have their own separate individual ones that sort of like ride along, ride alongside it or whatever. And of course, you can always have a modification where, you know, you could, you know, a thing on top for them to fire laser, like a laser cannon and stuff. So like Angela can jump from Pierre's car on top of the tank and start opening fire and have all that, you know, cool, fun stuff and everything. So the only thing I was sort of against was the idea of them physically joining together and turning into something else. Because then it's like, now we got fucking Stargate, Lightning Dogs, Prometheus, Voltron. You know, it's like it's so many things stacked on top. It's sort of like, where are you going with this? But I do like the idea of them having like their vehicles and they're hot rodding it, and they got neo old fashioned hot rods with, you know, the rock and roll and Wolfman AI, right, and everything over the radio waves and stuff, and they can ride alongside this cool tank. Sort of the turtle
the tank, like thinking of it as a tank. It's sort of difficult for me in my mind. I'm like, okay, yeah, they shouldn't have something that powerful, like right away anyway.
That's, right, right.
Thinking of it as, say, the Turtle Party Wagon, like an armored van kind of thing, that makes it, that I'm like, okay, well, that, the Party Wagon, I understand. We can work with that.
That's more how I feel. Like, okay. It's like, because it could be, the Party Wagon is like, you know, every spy movie ever, you got the guy outside the party. Yeah. With the earpiece and being like, all right, you gotta go left and you gotta go there, and I'm gonna hack into the security door and have it open for you or whatever. And they're all doing that in the van outside.
As far as villains go, we got Glampire.
Yeah.
We have Halloween Jack. A little bit more.
We'll have to discuss more about Halloween Jack, because the last I remember, he was human, then he's not human. I can't remember. He was never human, because all humans are basically done.
Yeah.
But he was like humanoid, but now he's not humanoid.
The way I was always thinking about him was that he's basically like,
He's green or whatever?
He is what he sounds like. He's like a ghoul, right? From like Fallout.
Okay, like, he's like a ghoul. I gotcha.
He looks like a nightmare.
Right.
Like a person, but not a person.
Right, okay, okay.
He has a gang, let's say, of other ghoul things, right? And he's a biker type, sort of.
Okay.
And we, you know, pull in a little bit from the David Bowie song, if we want to actually have noticeable buildings, and he lives on top of Manhattan Chase. But we, I guess we can, you know, we decide whether that happens or not. It's just not really, really important. He's the de facto flunky of Glampire at the beginning. You know, he's the Bebop and Rocksteady, or
right, like he's like the low level guy that they send out first to check it out, but he comes back and is just sort of like
the comedic running gag villain.
Yeah, I think he takes himself very seriously, but no one else. I mean,
he's not an idiot, but
it's just like Ultros, where Ultros is Octopus royalty, but he's still a running gag.
Like, he could be the most frequently encountered, I suppose, because if he's like, is he head of a gang?
Yeah.
Okay, then there you go. Yeah, if he's head of a gang, then...
And like, he's not bad at what he was doing, but he's definitely bad at dealing with the lightning dogs.
Yeah, well, come on, man. Fucking alien dogs from another planet. Like, how do you deal with that?
That could be fun. That could be fun, because he could be our first contact after the lightning dogs arrive back on Earth. The first living creature, or living creature they run into, is Halloween Jack and his gang.
Yeah, the first like real remnant of the old world or whatever.
He would then run back. So if we're picturing their arrival as your standard three episode, you know, like first intro to a series, he's episode one, or end of episode one, beginning of episode two,
whatever. Yeah.
Lands back. He runs back. We're introduced to Glampire and the Diamond Dogs. You know, Glampire as well. I guess we have to send out the Diamond Dogs. Fade in from shadow. We get to see the glinting forms, and then the conflict, and then the Farfetch'd is destroyed.
I feel like Halloween Jack is just like head general of the masses that all belong to Glampire. Like,
and the only reason he's the head is because he's got just a little bit more intelligence than the rest of them.
It's kind of like a general sort of position. You know? Like, these mutants are people.
He's like King of New York or whatever. Duke. He's like Duke of New York from Escape from New York. He's like the Duke.
Sure. Yeah.
So he's like living in garbage and shit. And
these things are people. They're just not nice people.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah.
And the way I see it is that the other roster of villains, I mean, think about it being as fleshed out as anything from, like, you know, Masters of the Universe or whatever. Like, Glampire and the world of the Wasteland is just teeming with, you know, mutant abortions of various kinds, like mash technology and freakish animal parts together as many ways as you can. Just, you know, have fun with it. It's all about making the coolest looking action figure. It's not, right. And then figuring it out.
That brings me to Captain Scrap, which is what I loved Captain Scrap. And I'll have you explain, because I was like,
sure. We were writing the comic and we were coming up with villains to be a sort of a second tier menace. Basically, it's like a turtle. He's like a fucked up mutant turtle, but not the teenage kind. Like, this is like a salty, scarred up loggerhead pirate with with a sword arm.
And I think, just as a nod, his shell has to be made out of manhole covers.
Not necessarily. You could. I would say
I want to draw his shell with manhole covers.
He could have. I wouldn't be against him having a manhole cover shield or having a manhole cover on his on top of his shell as like a protection thing. Like if his shell is like all scarred and fucked up from like all
honestly,
the battles.
When I drew him, I didn't even consider a shell. He's wearing a big ass trench coat, so I don't know what's going on under there. It didn't really come up for me. I didn't really consider it at all.
Could be a soft shell turtle.
Yeah.
Which is grosser. And, you know, this is, I mean, it would fit with the whole, like, Captain Scrap. Lives in the scrapyard, you know.
The other one that we had was Space Boy, which was just, you know, just another David Bowie reference. An opportunity to play with the sort of, like, Johnny Quest space horror, unfathomable, unknowable kind of stuff. Really, the only, like, design I thought would be most appropriate is, like, a very featureless spacesuit with a big frontal partial dome thing, and inside of it, instead of just being like reflection, look close enough and it just you just see the infinite universe. Stare into it too long, you go mad, you know, like shit like that.
I think I'm gonna have to draw a smiley face on the front of it.
I think
I like that image.
The thing that I liked about the Space Boy was that if that's a villain that they encounter later, that can be like a reminder that there is a whole universe of this. It's not just like
it's not just,
you know,
Earth.
It's like, you know, Lightning Dogs is like, oh, we finally know how to handle, you know, the Glampire. We finally really got a handle on him. Like, it's going to be back and forth, but we think we can finally handle it. Then you throw Space Boy in there, and you're like, what the fuck is going on? Like, there's always a new challenge up ahead, and it always expands their world a little bit further.
It's an opportunity to have, like, a creepy episode where they're trapped inside their own base, and the power's off, and there's this weird thing hovering through the tunnels.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is all shit that we, like, came up with in the between time, so, like,
yeah, okay,
what
else do we want to talk about?
Let's let some new blood right now.
Okay. We got a pretty good cast locked down for, like, the main heroes. For villains, I mean, we already got, so if we got Halloween Jack, he's got, like, a gang. If he's, like, the first thing they encounter, he's, like, tier one sort of thing. Going up the
he's
ladder.
He's a flunky.
Yeah, he's like a flunky. They're like the putties, basically. Is that, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Working your way up the ladder, you got Captain Scrap, you got the Diamond Dogs, you got Glampire, then you got Space Boy, who's kind of on his own. He's kind of, you know, maybe he's involved, maybe not. Oh, I remember we were talking about a villain, like a plant-based.
Right. And our plant-based character thing, we were talking about a hero.
So, like, but maybe, is he...
An anti-hero
in the sense that maybe he's doing his own thing and will sometimes work with the Lightning Dogs if it benefits him.
Kind of like a Casey Jones type character?
Well, even Casey Jones became friends with the Turtles. Like, they were buddies after a while.
I'm going to put this out there. Silverhawks.
I'm familiar with the Silverhawks, but I've never watched the Silverhawks. What are you thinking?
I am not sure. Chrome, space roaming, music playing.
I'm just going to put this out there. SWAT cats. What about it? I don't know.
Just go with it.
Make it happen.
But if we get a plant character who's like the champion of returning green to this world.
Yeah, his whole
goal. Because the world is decimated. You know, the planet is toast.
Let's swap out something there. Not champion.
Mm-hmm. He's the Malcolm X of the trees.
What if there were a whole bunch of these guys? So it's left.
Mm.
Yeah, I picture
kind of
him kind
of a war-torn hero or a final survivor.
Like a last vestige whose war is over, whose battle is lost, but he fights on knowing
that. Well, hold on. If we're the sci-fi coming into the sword and fantasy kind of idea, what if instead of him being like a mutant or anything, he's like a forest spirit? There are several different forest spirits or spirits of that particular area. Like there could be a mountain spirit or something. And so if what the Lightning Dogs are doing is in congruence with helping that part of nature, the spirit would help them. But if they transgress, then the spirit would be totally against them.
So when they start marking their territory, all shit goes to hell.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if they start pissing on a tree, it'd be like, what are you doing?
What if?
I mean, like even looking for firewood. To start a fire would be enough to be a transgression, get the forest spirit to go, no, you didn't, fucker.
What if this character is Captain Planet in a post-apocalyptic world where he failed?
Like, Captain Planet is fucking pissed.
Yes, and Major Globe.
And not with the ridiculous powers of Captain Planet, right. Not with the Deus Ex Machina powers of Captain Planet, but, like, an entity that had to be summoned. Its worshippers are gone. And like Brian was saying, like, it's war-torn. Like, not, like I said, not a champion. Something that's angry. and it'll fight you. It'll fight the lightning dogs when it first sees them. It'll like, it has maybe a last stand, a place that it's, you know, it's got, and no one's even bothered to take it over because the world is so fucked. Who cares, like, about the little
grotto? So, like, the last forest or whatever?
Yeah, who cares about the little grotto where this thing, like, you know, hangs out, and and then maybe, you know, the lightning dogs and their presence there, he's like, well, maybe the tide's turned. Maybe I can make a difference again.
Mm-hmm. That could be interesting. I do like the idea of a dynamic of a Captain Planet who has failed. And
yeah,
and the lightning dogs, even though he's technically not their enemy, they're always just like, dude, don't fucking do that, because he'll show up if you do that. So don't do that, you know? Like, almost like in a Beetlejuice sort of way. It's like, don't fucking do that, because if he comes here, we're screwed. So let's see if we can trick Glampire into doing it. But of course, Glampire never falls for it.
Halloween Jack, on the other hand, oh, yeah, every time.
Every time, yeah, yeah. It's like, the lightning dogs went down into that tunnel. Let's smoke them out. Burn some wood, guys. And they start burning wood. All of a sudden,
hey, use that forest over there.
Like Captain Planet meets Dr. Manhattan.
What are you doing?
It's like, oh, no, it's that guy. Oh, damn it.
But he
who knew trees are made of wood?
But he can't be too powerful. He still needs to be kind of like... maybe he would be extremely powerful if the world wasn't a complete dump.
Right, but he gets his power from the land that isn't ruined, and all that's not ruined is this little forest. And as the forest is weakened, he loses power, which is why he's really pissed when people ruin the forest.
We get to do a really heavy-handed environmental episode. It'd be great.
I do like the idea of he's got his own little forest. He's got his own little area. I don't think we need to go so far as to say it's literally the only patch of green left on the whole entire planet. Like, there should be a little tree here and there.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's not like a square mile or something. Like, this is still a substantial forest, but in the long run, it's not.
It's his territory,
and it'll be like the nicest thing that anyone sees this entire time. Yeah,
in fact, it might be the only place that like if you could physically go there and not piss him off, just going there, you'd be like, oh, this does feel like old Earth, you know?
Right.
Like, well, because there would be clean water and shit.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And possibly even, like, normal animals that aren't all mutated to fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, two of them. We can't have too many now.
Well, even if there's more than two of them, it's just like, what are they going to do? They ain't going to leave the fucking woods. You know, it's like, they're not going to be like, oh, it's so wonderful here. Let's go into the desert.
he's got what appears to be normal animals, except we know they're not normal animals. So he is a liger.
So because this is thousands of years. You got Beast Hound. Like, Beast Hound isn't a mutant. It's just after thousands of years of
out in the barrows.
Yeah,
wouldn't it be kind of funny if all the creatures in the forest were like the cryptozoological animals? Like, you've got Nessie living in like the water, yeah. Sasquatch walking
after
around.
All those years.
A bunch of cryptids.
What if the plant hero is a Sasquatch?
Well. You know what? That kind of reminds me of...
But then he's not a plant hero. Then he's just a nature hero.
A Japanese monster movie I remember from when I was a kid. It was like a moss man. Like, it was kind of like the old Sasquatch footage, but it was a creature that was made of like moss and vegetation. And it was kind of horrifying as a kid.
Is that getting a little too close to Swamp Thing, though?
Well, it was very close to Swamp Thing, but it had sort of... You said the Sasquatch, and I thought of, like, well, what about a green Sasquatch? But then also, plant character with human features seems somewhat, one, too close to Swamp Thing, and three... Maybe just a little untrue to its origins. Plants are very alien.
Yeah. It doesn't have to look like a human.
Weird,
you know?
Fucking orchid face, maybe.
That'd be kind of terrifying, actually.
You call him orchid face.
Just like it's like when he's just like, when he just, it just seems like it's like a bud that doesn't open, but then when he's ready to attack, it just splits open like the thing, and it's like, and you're like, oh, Jesus.
It's kind of beautiful. It's got its stamen on me.
It's beautiful, but terrifying at the same time.
Yeah, I'm into that.
With the like long arms and shit. And like the other thing too is that if it like, this might be going too far, but if it could like pop up out of the ground, like that's how it shows up, like almost like Tremors or some shit, where it's just like you see the little Bugs Bunny tunnel coming through, and you're like, oh shit, and then it pops up, and it's just one of these spores. So it could, like, I don't want to go the whole Groot route, right. But like if that thing never leaves its woods, but it could control, if it senses danger, it's not going to leave the protection of the woods to go out and take care of it. But it'll just send that shit out to do its work for it. And like, then you got Venus fly traps and shit. I don't want to say minions of it, but extensions of him reach out and start, you know, taking shit down. So
its roots run the whole world over.
Yeah. So it's like if Halloween Jack starts burning shit to like get the lightning dogs out of the tunnel, all of a sudden outside, these roots and stuff climb up and grab some of them, keep them still, and then a giant Venus flytrap pops out of the ground and swallows a couple, and then after it does its stuff, it'll go away, or, you know, the Halloween Jack will burn it or something, and it'll fall down or whatever, and the lightning dogs are like, what the heck, what is this? Like, this planet is mad, and like, what is going on? If they slowly, that could be something they can discover, like, what's causing all this craziness, and then when they finally get in there, they get into the discover the woods, and that's another way to open up the universe of this planet, like open up the different locations.
Yeah, I mean,
stuff.
I figure we gotta have like we got a Thunderdome, in there. Yeah. We got some. Like,
that's what Halloween Jack is, like the Mad Max Thunderdome, biker gang, decrepit city sort of thing. With this plant guy, you've got the nature aspect, but like grown out of control over thousands of years, but also peaceful, but also kind of scary in its own way. With Glampire, you've got like civilization, but in the ruins of the old world, you know, but not in the same way as Halloween Jack, where it's like all gross and
stuff.
He
has his own Goblin Kingdom, all sort of carved out.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But
his Glampire Kingdom,
right? But his goals are very lofty. To the stars.
Yeah.
An idea I always like that I haven't really found a good place to throw in, but this seems like a perfect place to do it, is the whole idea of like a robot city. All of the robots of the fallen empires and whatever that are remaining have all congregated in this little patch of land that they're just trying to terraform into their own robot kingdom.
Six blocks down from the last forest. You know, the last vestiges of all these societies.
It's like something that it could be like at some point that becomes the new terror. That is the thing that is even making Glampire tremble.
Well, because Glampire just can't sense robots.
That's what happens to Russia.
Well, I was gonna know. It's a good thing you said it, because I was gonna say, let's not forget we're on the planet Earth and we're not just in America.
Circuitry Russia,
like it could
machine.
Honestly, America is even in the post-apocalypse the most important part. Obviously,
it's clearly even when all humans are dead, it's the best damn country on the planet. You don't like it, get out.
New York City's the best goddamn city out there.
You know, I hate that because we have Halloween Jack, we really do need to have it like in the ruins of New York City. But at the same time, I'm tired of New York City.
Yeah, not necessarily. It could just be a major city. If the apocalypse that took out the humans doesn't happen for another 100 years for us, who's to say that New York is that center, metropolis or whatever?
New York does have a very fundamentally important role because it is, at least in the context of America, where travelers arrive.
But Ellis Island is
the window to the rest of this world, so we can kind of use that.
But if the world's destroyed, who cares? Like, let's just go with whatever looks cool and feels cool, not have to have it tied to the real world.
Yeah, that's a valid point.
Cincinnati.
It's like, seriously, what would be the difference between Halloween Jack being like, we say, oh no, it's New York, and it's like destroyed New York, or saying, oh no, it's L.A., but destroyed L.A.? Ultimately, really, what's the difference?
Yeah, well, I mean,
in the ruins of Albuquerque,
it's unchanged.
You're right, Doug. The future that's destroyed is in the way future, so there's no reason
for
us.
So who cares?
Yeah, we can't,
pretty much.
Nothing would even look the same.
Like really, who would it appeal to if the lightning dogs one day were like, I've discovered this human city was once called New York. And it's just like, oh, I get it.
Like
it's
a
New
Yorkshire
York.
Terrier.
Yeah, I get it. It's like New York. Or maybe the Yorkshire Terriers originally came from here. It'd be like, well, the audience watching would go, so they've discovered it's New York. Really, who cares? Whereas if it's Halloween Town and Halloween Jack runs the place, then like that's what it is now, and that's what matters.
I mean, if we give like subtle clues of what it used to be, and the viewer figures it out on their own,
right? Like that's different.
Be a fun little surprise for them.
Yeah, like and eventually, when the lightning dogs get like jets or helicopters or whatever, and they decide to go check out the rest of this planet, because the planet. I mean, again, we got other countries. You got other landscapes. We don't have to just stick to North American landscapes. It's like if Wolfman Jack was
And I'm sure that the nuclear bombs did a really good job of terraforming the world make it more interesting
after
for our
a thousand
stories.
Years. Yeah. So if there's a mid-season arc is Wolfman Jack is the AI gets destroyed and then like, oh, we only have a few bit of battery left for Wolfman Jack to tell us like, Wolfman, how do we get you back? He's like, you go down to Antarctica, you can find my backup systems on the server. You gotta go and hack into the cloud and get it back. So like they gotta go to Antarctica and go into the like deep underground, whatever.
Using the lightning dodge arrow.
Fight mutant penguins.
Fight mutant penguins. Yeah, mutant penguins are all or mutant polar bears or whatever. Yeah, whatever.
And led by a robot.
Yeah. And then you
who
know
thinks
whatever.
He's a penguin.
Led by a robot who thinks he's a penguin.
Never seen that before.
Except the robot can fly. That's why they worship him.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we got a cast. Seems pretty cool.
Yeah, we got some villains. I'm liking the villains.
We got a couple villains and some great starting points for a couple villains. And I think another way to look at it is to say, let's think of villains and locations and how they can be tied together.
Right.
Like, because if we got Plant Man in the plant area, we got Robot Guy in Antarctica. We've got.
I really like the idea of like an abandoned, twisted amusement park being where Halloween Jack has his throne.
Coney Island.
Yes. Precisely.
And he's queen.
Yeah. Exactly. Like Halloween Jack's got that feel to it. Plant Guy's got that feel to it. The Antarctica robot possible thing that whatever's in the future, we can figure out more desert stuff, like Egyptian stuff, like, you know, whatever. Now that we're discussing that it's Earth, let's open up Earth a little bit more, see what more the planet itself can offer us, especially after 1,000 years after a nuclear fallout.
And let me just say, as the guy drawing all this shit, I cannot wait to draw the kid and all the 90s gear.
Rollerblades. Bold in red.
High tops that deploy rollerblades and well, have she rockets just, she attached to the back.
She could just make her own rollerblades. Like if she finds like a pair of high tops and is like, oh, this is what humans wore. And she loves humans. She loves the Masters. She puts them on and then she sees like Masters on rollerblades. She's like, I'm going to build that out of this. She can just build high top rollerblades.
They light up and they are powered by rockets.
They light up as she rolls.
I don't know about the rockets, but let's light up. Yeah, that definitely.
Light up high tops are. Yeah, that's pretty good. That's a good start.
I feel what's good about what we have is here. We do have a core cast finally.
Yeah,
finally. And we have two important things on the map. We have Glampire's Dominion, and we have the like somewhat subterranean base that the Lightning Dogs operate out of.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like now we're in a position where between those two opposing forces, we can now fill in the middle.
Fill the rest of this world.
Yeah, so that's great. So now we just got to figure out what the next step is. Well, the next step is to fast forward to 1 year later. This episode was released July 2013, and we didn't team up for another episode until July 2014. It's shameful, really. And at this point, looking back, it's absurd. I don't know how we managed. Though, we certainly didn't stop thinking about Lightning Dogs. In the next episode, we regroup and share the ideas and developments that were kicking around our brains for a whole year. We definitely never expected it to be so long, but as we got busier with both other aspects of Nerdy Show and our lives, it got harder and harder to get the same team together. And in fact, we never did again. What you just heard is the last of our original Lightning Dogs recordings with Brian. It was around this time that he stepped back from hosting Nerdy Show at large, as his life of riding Atomic Robo picked up. It doesn't mean that Brian won't be involved with Lightning Dogs again in some respect, and all that extra time working on amazing action science adventures were certainly well worth it. You can read all of Atomic Robo for free at atomic-robo.com. But before I jump too far ahead, if any of these developing concepts for Lightning Dogs are shooting sparks in your brain, you're not alone. Between episodes 2 and 3 of Lightning Dogs, we got more fan art, in this case, two wildly different takes on the Diamond Dogs. Matt Hasm's interpretation was a Doberman in heavy armor, and Anik Zimmer went down a path I myself had gone in some preliminary sketches, an Anubis-shaped figure made entirely out of harsh-angled crystals. If you have any fan art, just email us at lightningdogs@nerdyshow.com, post it to the forums, or share it on any of the Lightning Dogs social feeds. We've got a growing gallery of awesome art that's been sent our way, even some fan fiction. Lightning Dogs has come a long way since our early days, and now that we've hit a point to where we're developing the show in earnest, we've grown a fair amount of production costs, like paying for audio editing, concept art from outside artists, as well as general business costs, like yearly fees to maintain our LLC. If you like what we do and would like to help us develop the series further, please consider joining the pack and supporting Lightning Dogs via Patreon. With your help, we can increase productivity, do cool projects like comics, create episode animatics, audio dramas, or even extra special projects like the first one we're working on, having Greg Weissman, creator of Gargoyles, co-creator of Young Justice, review our pitch Bible for Lightning Dogs and advise us on how we should move forward. He's agreed to do it, but he can't do it for free. After that, we've got what would be a life-changing goal, for Doug to quit his job. He's agreed to come work for Lightning Dogs for practically nothing, really. If that happens, we'll be able to make this a weekly series and crank out much more Lightning Dogs awesomeness. So join our pack on patreon.com/lightningdogs. You'll help us create more content, and you'll receive a lot in return, too, including early release episodes, concept art, high-res production materials, exclusive recordings, and anything else we can dig up. Join us next time as we continue the adventures of the Lightning Dogs. Oh! We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to Lightning Dogs, the official podcast presented by Nerdy Show. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes, like and follow us on SoundCloud and Audioboom, or subscribe and stream on Google Play. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows in the Nerdy Show network alive by telling a friend or funding us via Patreon. At patreon.com/nerdyshow, you can fund the whole Nerdy Show network and unlock a plethora of amazing bonus content and early releases. And at patreon.com/lightningdogs, you can fund the further development of the entire Lightning Dogs universe, from podcasts to animation, while getting all kinds of behind-the-scenes bonus materials and extras. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. Be sure to follow Nerdy Show and Lightning Dogs on all your favorite social networks. Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, we're on all of them. Just search for Lightning Dogs. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.